From high above the very edge of the vast Pacific Ocean, this is Hilly Rose wishing you a kind and gentle night. Sitting in tonight for George Norrie, who is on vacation. Which brings up the issue, where does someone who broadcasts from a cave, who is somewhere out there, where does he go for vacation? Have to find out when he gets back. And he'll be back with you next Monday night. We have a great show for you tonight. We're going to be talking to Lauren Coleman in just a few moments. He is the cryptozoologist who appears on this program from time to time. And we're going to ask him the key question of why is it with all the tragedy in the tsunami area that no animals have been found dead. In fact, there's another wrinkle on that, which I'll get to in just a moment in the news. But why is that? And we'll also talk to him about the 10 biggest stories, cryptozoological stories. In other words, new creatures that have been found in the past year, 2004. And maybe we'll have time to talk about Mothman. A lot of deaths surround Mothman. Plus, and this is the bulk of the show, we're going to be talking with a lady by the name of Shelley Kerr about evidence of parallel universes. Did you ever see somebody that looked just like you? I mean, that's unsettling, isn't it? Is it possible that person is from another parallel universe? What if that person is sitting with your mate? Double vision. That's a doppelganger. And we'll find out what that's all about coming up later in the program. Probably won't have time tonight for open line, but I promise you tomorrow in the first hour, we will go to open line. And tomorrow also, we have some exemplary people, including Zechariah Sitchin. And I've been getting all kinds of mail saying, will you open the lines to Zechariah Sitchin? Yes, I will. You can confront him yourself, but that's tomorrow. Tonight, let's look a little bit at what's going on in the world. There is no bigger story, of course, than the tsunami. The United States stepped up its diplomatic and relief effort in the tsunami countries, sending Secretary of State Colin Powell to the hardest hit region. The United Nations said extraordinary progress in reaching the needy was being matched by extraordinary obstacles. And that's a terrible thing. 10 days after the tsunami devastated Indian Ocean coastlines. Extraordinary progress, but extraordinary obstacles. Indonesia said on Wednesday 500,000 people, some 80,000 above earlier estimates, were homeless in Aceh province alone at the northern end of Sumatra Island, where the giant wave claimed 2/3 of their known 150,000 victims. I told you I was going to mention something that's really strange. There was an Indian helicopter today that was dropping food and water over the remote Andaman and Nicobar Islands. And the helicopter was attacked by tribesmen using bows and arrows. There were fears the endangered tribal groups had been wiped out when massive waves struck their islands, but authorities say the attack is a sign they have survived. Now, the Andaman and Nicobar archipelago is home to several tribes, a very isolated area, but officials believe they survived the devastation by using age-old early warning systems. They might have run to high ground for safety after noticing changes in the behavior of birds and marine wildlife. Scientists are examining the possibility to see whether it can be used to predict earth tremors in the future. So, you know what those ancients knew probably was a lot more than we know. The governor of the Baghdad region, known for cooperating closely with American troops, was assassinated today, along with six bodyguards, as he drove to work. It's another bloody day. Other assaults today killed five American troops, as well as 10 Iraqi commandos, bringing the death toll in the last 3 days to more than 70. White House spokesman Scott McClellan acknowledged, here's a new term, folks, security challenges in Iraq, but said the election timetable would not be changed. Yeah, they may kill a lot of folks. It's just a security challenge. That's all it is. U.S. military and intelligence sources are denying print and broadcast reports that terrorist Abu Musab al-Zarqawi has been arrested in Iraq. In other words, that comes up every once in a while. Right now they're saying, nope, no truth to that one. Too bad about that. And federal authorities today used the Patriot Act to charge a man with pointing a laser beam at an airplane overhead and temporarily blinding the pilot and co-pilot. The FBI said this wasn't terrorism, but called David Banach's actions foolhardy and negligent. And when they picked up this man, he tried to blame it on his daughter. He said his daughter aimed the device at the helicopter. Tweren't true, though. He fessed up at the end. Okay, want you to know, this is very, very important, that Congress convened, the 104th Congress convened today. And according to Dennis Hastert, who heads up the House, quote, in this Congress, big plans will stir men's blood. Got that? That's a direct quote from Dennis Hastert. In this Congress, big plans will stir men's blood. Well, let's see what these guys did today to stir men's blood. Here's some of the highlights of the day. Did I say 104th? It's 109th Congress. Vice President Dick Cheney sat in the Senate President's chair. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist called for a moment of silence for the Asian tsunami victims. 34 people were given the oath of office by Cheney in groups numbering no more than four. I don't know why that, I mean, that takes a little more time, I guess. That's a little more pomp and circumstance. Among those taking the oath was Senator Pat Leahy, a frequent critic of the vice president. Last summer, you may remember, Cheney cursed the Vermont Democrat while senators were having their annual group picture taken in the Capitol. But this time, they politely shook hands. No bad words were heard. Senator Barack Obama became the country's sole black senator, only the fifth in history. Keep your eye on that guy. He's going places. And one of the highlights of the action today, let's stir men's souls, freshman Senator Mel Martinez of Florida said he dreamed of playing Major League Baseball when he fled Cuba as a 15-year-old. Quote, I was good enough for that. I wasn't good enough for that, I guess I should say here. I wasn't good enough for that, but I did make it to the Senate. And I guess that's a pretty good consolation prize. Yep, if you can't play baseball, become a senator. Well, Martinez said, I plan on playing hooky on afternoon games. Does that stir your blood? As Dennis Hastert promised it would. I hope so. That's just a little bit of what's to come from the Senate of the United States. Oh, and there's one quick more story. Actually, it's a yesterday's story, but I wanted to mention it. NASA scientists and engineers celebrated the robot's first year on Mars. Space agency officials have given the two rovers a life expectancy of only 3 months, and even that looked dicey. But no, it's been a year. And what have they seen? Well, they say there may be water up there. What a heck of a lot of other people are saying other things. And Zechariah Sitchin tomorrow night will tell you what he thinks may be on Mars. All right, that's about it. We're coming up in just a moment here with Lauren Coleman to see why it is no animals were found in the tsunami region. Sri Lankan wildlife officials are stunned. Here is the worst tsunami in memory. It's killed thousands and thousands of people along the Indian Ocean's islands coast. But they can't find any dead animals. These giant waves wash floodwaters up to 2 miles inland, Yala National Park, in the ravaged southeast Sri Lankan's biggest wildlife reserve, and home to hundreds of wild elephants and several leopards. According to H.D. Ratnayake, deputy director of that wildlife department, the strange thing is we haven't recorded any dead animals. No elephants are dead, not even a dead hare or rabbit. I think animals can sense disaster. They have a sixth sense. They know when things are happening. Well, Lauren Coleman knows when things are happening. Lauren is a leading researcher on the Bigfoot phenomena. He's written just the premier book called Bigfoot, The True Story of Apes in America. I think there's a relationship here. But Lauren is one of the world's leading cryptozoologists. And he backs up his assertions with hundreds of years worth of source material. He's written a new book called The Field Guide to Lake Monsters, Sea Serpents, and Other Mystery Denizens. So, Lauren, what's the story? What's going on in Sri Lanka and these other areas that the animals seem to have a warning system that people didn't have?
Well, good night, Hilly, and it's good talking to you. I think that we first of all have to get clear that there have been animals found dead. They've been dogs, cats, and domestic animals, but what people are talking about is there have not been found any wild animals, no deers, leopards, elephants. Those kinds of animals seem to have picked up on either a lower range of sound or vibrations or whatever the sixth sense is. And I think we need to really back up and what is intuition? What is the sixth sense? We don't really know. And I think what we have to do is look at the information. The information coming out of the Indian Ocean area is that wild animals, as well as if you look deeper at some of these reports, you'll find that the people that are the natives, the people that are living more of a uncivilized life, if you want to use that word, or a natural life, were able to pick up on signs like birds flying away, or like actually on one report, I saw that they actually heard the ocean, and they picked up because they lived in a naturally quiet area away from a town, away from a built-up village area. They were able to hear the sound of the ocean tell them that a tidal wave was coming, and I think that's pretty remarkable. So there have been a lot of humans. Almost every animal that has been found dead is one that is naturally connected to humans, such as rats, dogs, cats, some livestock like cattle. But if you look deeper in the report, you'll even find that the hippopotamus at the zoo went into a zoo in Malaysia, went into its surrounding, a hut that it lives in at the zoo. We have area in India where there was a wildlife sanctuary, and out of 2,000 animals, they only found one wild boar dead. You have areas in other areas in India where they have no animal carcasses reported. So it is quite a remarkable experiment. Of course, we have to really be conscious of the human relief area effort, and we really have to back that.
Well, we certainly are. And,
yeah.
And I didn't mention in the news that NBC is going to have a major telethon for people to contribute. So I think this is one of the biggest efforts America has ever made to give relief to people. So I think we're doing that. But that's not what we're focusing on here tonight.
What I
wondered is, now we know that dogs can hear things at a different level than we can. So,
well, we also know that elephants do, too. Elephants listen or hear things through the vibrations of their body at a lower infrasound level. We also know that in deep-sea fish during earthquakes come up from the deep oceans. In the year 373 B.C., in Greece, they noticed that rats, snakes, and weasels came out of areas, and it predicted earthquake. So we see a lot of that. Of course, one of the most frequent guests is Dr. Berkman on this show,
right,
who talks about lost dogs predicting the 1989 earthquake in Northern California.
Yeah, well, he just looks in the paper to see if people looking for lost cats and dogs, that amount increases, then he figures there's an earthquake coming. So
I've been doing also is looking at the actual sighting reports of Bigfoot to see if there's any correlation between, for instance, when Mount St. Helens went off in May 18th, 1980, and looking back at some of the records, it's quite surprising, perhaps, but from November 78 through November 79, there's actually an increased amount of activity of Bigfoot sightings in Washington State. And then we even have a report on May 18th that two men were coming down the mountain right after the eruption, and they saw a Bigfoot come out of the woods, had a very good sighting, then went back in the woods. So it's something that people haven't really looked at too closely, but there may be actual evidence within the Sasquatch Bigfoot reports for some correlation here between seismic events and certain sightings.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. The Bigfoot, many people have sighted Bigfoot, but there has never been a carcass that has been found that I'm aware of. I mean,
right.
There are some, allegorical stories, but no. I mean, there was the Iceman, for example, but
also some reports in military operations in Asia where people would report killing Bigfoot-type creatures. But the thing is, as Grover Krantz and myself and other researchers have asked around the country, you ask any wildlife biologist, when is the last time you found a dead bear or a dead mountain lion in the woods? And they can't tell you. You know, obviously those animals, especially bear, might get hit on the road, but you don't have reports of these dead large animals in the woods. And so it's not surprising to me that we have not found a dead Bigfoot in the woods.
Well, you know as well as I do that elephants, they will come back and pick up their dead and I guess bring them to their own burial grounds. So I would assume that that's what's happening with Bigfoot.
Well, it seems like if we have an intelligent primate out there, they're certainly gathering their dead and they're covering them over. Maybe they're burying them or putting them in caves. So it's quite reasonable within the higher primates that we wouldn't be able to find their bodies.
Well, what I was wondering, Lauren, is it possible that Bigfoot has some kind of warning system about humans, knowing that humans are not their friend? And is it possible that they are able to escape detection because of whatever radar they have?
Well, I think that there's enough evidence that the Bigfoot, Sasquatch avoid humans. They avoid guns. They avoid cameras. They avoid human habitation. It's sort of the incidental interactions between humans, people seeing them crossing the roads and different things like that. There seems to be, I'm very cautious of using the word sixth sense because it's a word that's not really well defined. But if we look at the ability of a Bigfoot, which is closer to nature, to really have an access to all of its senses, to actually take these five senses and come up with a sixth, I think that's what we've got going on with Bigfoot. They're much more aware of what's going on around them. They seem to be smart enough. As Dr. Carlton Kuhn once said, if the meek shall inherit the earth, it will be the Sasquatch, because they know well enough to stay away from polluted cities. And, at some level of humor, I think that Bigfoot may be smarter than us, because they're certainly avoiding civilization, and they have been around for a long time.
What do you make of this story about the tribal people who perhaps were noticing the behavior of birds and marine wildlife? That indicates that birds and marine wildlife also had some kind of warning system.
Oh, definitely. I think that they're picking up on a lot of different things that we as humans, not to say people weren't unaware on the beaches, but humans tend to really block out a lot of natural signals that are coming from nature, and we're really seeing that within these reports. The humans that are surviving are those ones that were closely connected to their environment. Those that were watching the ocean, watching the birds, listening to some of the fish, seeing the water bubble. And so if you have the First Nations people, the native peoples, which are much closer to this, whether it's in the Pacific Northwest or China or the Indian Ocean area, you oftentimes get the reports of the native peoples knowing well enough to pay attention to these signs and head for the hills when the time is right.
I was interested in your comment that certain of the peoples they heard the water. In other words, they're in tune with what the water sounds like. And I guess over the many years, this isn't the first tsunami they've ever had, just the biggest.
Right.
So therefore, they knew what was coming.
Right. They heard the roar of the ocean, and the ocean spoke to them. And the actual traditions, I think, sometimes pick up on this and pass it down from generation to generation.
Wow. All right, Lauren, in the next portion of the program, I want to talk to you about Mothman. I want to talk to you about some of the great finds this year. I understand that the world's largest cockroach has been found, so we'll talk about that with Lauren Coleman in just a moment. I am Hilly Rose, sitting in for George Norrie.
Wildcard line at 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is 818-501-4721. From east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, 1-800-618-8255. International callers may call their in-country Sprint access number. Press option 5. Then dial toll-free 800-893-0903. Now, sitting in for George Norrie, this is Coast to Coast AM with guest host Hilly Rose.
Sunday night, a week ago Sunday night, I mentioned that the Earth's rotation was affected, and I was challenged by a number of people saying, where did you hear this? And I did give the source. It was a source out of Italy. Well, now here's another source. Richard Gross, a geophysicist with NASA, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California, theorized that a shift of mass toward the Earth's center during the quake on Sunday caused the planet to spin 3 microseconds or 1/1,000,000th of a second faster and to tilt about an inch on its axis. So it's another theory, another scientist has been heard from. Our guest is a gentleman by the name of Lauren Coleman. He's a cryptozoologist. And we've learned a lot from Lauren about so many new critters that seem to be found all the time. And we will continue in the next hour, by the way. We'll be talking about rather strange Well, strange parallel universes that may occur. I'll be talking to Dr. Shelley Kerr. But let's get right back to Lauren Coleman after these words. This is Hilly Rose in for George Norrie, who is on vacation. Be back with you next Monday night. And actually, they're replaying some tapes of his on Thursday and Friday, so you can hear him just a couple of nights. By the way, for Christmas, did you get George's double CD? If you didn't, well, you ought to order it. You're going to like this one. It's 2.5 hours of material, including some of the great bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, and classic ghost stories from H.G. Wells, Edgar Allan Poe, others that George performs. Especially priced for Coast to Coast fans, you can order it right now at www.afterdarkcd.com or calling 1-800-598-2331. Well, as I mentioned in the last half hour, researchers from the Nature Conservancy say they have discovered the world's largest cockroach. Did you know about that, Lauren?
Yes, I saw that news. It came out just before Christmas, didn't it? It was 4 inches long.
Yeah, it's terrible. How would you like to have a kitchen full of 4-inch-long cockroaches?
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. In Borneo, of all places, right near the epicenter of the Indonesia earthquake.
Hmm. Well, there must be a reason for it.
Yeah.
Were they coming out to early warning to let us know that something was going to happen?
I don't know. It could be. One thing about cryptozoology, we're very interested in animals that have an impact on humans that are large enough to be seen by humans. And one of the other interesting animals that was discovered in December, announced in December, is a deep forest monkey in India, in northeast area of India, was discovered by some scientists there. And this is quite a large, heavyset, dark brown primate, and it's quite exciting because it is actually the primate that now has been found at the highest altitudes of 11,000 feet above sea level. And so it's quite exciting because the native peoples knew about it, but it wasn't known to Western science. And this is actually the area which was called the Hump during World War II, where the flying tigers flew over. And so it's an area that's now being investigated almost as a new lost world of animals, because they feel there's other new animals to be discovered there.
Oh, there are probably thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
Let's talk to west of the Rockies. Who's calling?
This is Renee from Sacramento, California.
Hi there. What's your question?
Well, actually, I had a comment, Healy.
All right.
When you were talking about the tsunami and animals having sensing ahead about things, I have noticed that I have two cats, and they have, an hour before a storm comes in, they go to the door and they want in. And this is every single storm.
Well, Lauren, do you have a feeling about that?
Well, I think the cats certainly have a feeling, and that's been shown to be the case, that animals sometimes get very irritated and agitated. So she's got a couple of very sensitive cats.
Okay. Thank you, Renee. Let's try east of the Rockies. Hi. Where are you calling from, please?
This is Brooke, and I'm calling from Rhode Island.
Uh-huh.
Hilly, and is your guest name Lionel?
Lauren.
Lauren. Mm-hmm. Very interesting program. I first started hearing an extra low frequency hum up in Vermont, and I have now heard this in 4 states, and I'm now in Rhode Island. And I hear, and prior to the earthquake and tsunami, I was hearing it 24 hours a day here, including during the day, and I could hear it above the building behind me having a lot of construction work done on it. I could hear this low frequency hum above all this. And I have a funny feeling I'm in tune to the same kind of sound frequency that the animals are tuned to. And it's kind of weird, because prior to living in Vermont, I have never had this sensation in my life. And I was just wondering if you can comment on this, and if there. And I understand that there are people, you know, quite a few people, or a small percentage of people that can hear this and feel this. And maybe we should have a hotline to your show so we can call in and warn people if there's something bad going to happen like this.
Well, Lauren lives in Maine. Have you heard anything, Lauren?
No, but I really respect the fact that there are some people that are super sensitive to different, you know, frequencies beyond what most people can hear. So this may be one of those sensitive people. I have gone with individuals into certain hot spots or window areas, and they can get out of the car and they say, I have to get back in the car because I'm hearing a buzzing. So I've heard this before.
Well, there are areas of the United States where people have heard underground noises, humming, all kinds of various
sounds. Sure, the MODIS Connecticut sounds and different things like mm-hmm. that.
So it's possible, Brooke, that you're just super sensitive. And, the minute you hear something strange, I mean, did you hear something strange before the tsunami hit? Are you still there, Brooke? Hello?
He must be gone.
I guess he's gone. Okay. Let's go west of the Rockies here. Hi, where are you calling from?
Hello.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
San Jose, California.
Yes, ma'am. And your name?
Carol.
All right, Carol, you're on. Go ahead.
Okay. Somebody was indicating on another talk show something of interest, that animals have a better sense of hearing than we do, so they might indeed hear the tidal wave before it. We can hear it at a greater distance.
Oh, yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Also, their sense of smell. Somebody said that during an earthquake, ozone is released, and that animals simply have this better sense of smell. They might very well be able to smell it in much smaller concentrations.
I think there's a variety of different senses that these animals are accessing, and I think what we're saying is that those scientists that have been skeptical of animals being early warning, you know, sensors should wake up to the fact that these animals are certainly trying to tell us something.
Yeah, their hearing and their sense of smell
sure.
are just better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Carol. You know, it's interesting. Not only do we not hear, we look, but we don't see. It's amazing what goes on around us.
Right.
And we'll be talking about that in the next hour. We talk about parallel universes. But I guess we have to hand it to the animals. I know how to put this into words. I think we are so busy. I think we busy out our minds, and therefore we don't see what's really going on around us or here.
Right.
So that's what modern civilization has brought us. Lauren, I want to talk to you a little bit about this business of Mothman. Now, I, of course, knew about the Mothman story, but I did not know that there were a long string of deaths. I've heard about, friends of Bill who died. I've heard about the assassination of Kennedy and all the people who've died. But I did not know that there was a whole list of people who have died, you know, surrounding themselves with Mothman.
Right. I started picking up on this. The people at Sony Screen Gems had asked me to help them get out the word that the Mothman movie, which came out in 2002, was based on reality. So I started going around the country to radio shows and being interviewed, and what people started telling me was that individuals closely associated with the sightings or the movie were dying. And so I started gathering the information. That's why I put together the list, which is now up to 83 different people.
Wow.
And sadly, this even includes the wife of the director of the movie, Jennifer Barnett Pellington, who died last summer.
What do you attribute this to, something specific?
42 years old, she was. Well, I don't know. You know, people use the word curse, and if you even look on some pages, urban legend pages, they talk about the movie Poltergeist, and there's four people just four people associated with that movie who have died. But if you look at the Mothman movie, you find, you know, the executive producer. You'll find that the week that the movie was released, brothers and sisters and relatives of different eyewitnesses in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, were dying. You find that people that have been associated with John Keel and some of the early investigations die in a time, you know, sequence that seems very much related to the movie. So, and they're young people. I mean, anywhere from 16 years old to 57, you know, very young people, relatively speaking.
But, Lauren, Mothman really, I hate to use the word fraud, but it's really not anything unusual. There's a lot of fantasy that has gone into Mothman.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that. From 1966 to 1967, over 100 to 200 witnesses saw what seems to be a large bird. It unfortunately got the word Mothman from a copy editor in West Virginia because that individual liked the Batman series on TV. But, you know, I've been down there. I've interviewed lots of people. If you look at it in the context of what's happened in West Virginia and up through the Appalachians, there's large birds, you know, from thunderbirds to large giant owls.
Yeah, but they're not vampires. They're not, you know, evil-looking.
No, the Mothman situation has been overblown into a fantasy about prophecy and about banshee, but there seems to be something there in terms of almost as if Point Pleasant was a test tube of strange phenomena with UFO reports, with men in black, with, you know, even cattle mutilations all happening during this incredible 13-month period. I'm not saying that they're interrelated, but the fact that they were all happening there at the same time certainly has freaked out the population of the area. And then to have a death curse that seems to be associated with Mothman, too. You know, I'm getting a lot of help from individuals down there. There's probably a good group of 13 individuals, genealogists, historians that are feeding me information. So I'm not saying that people are fearful of this, but they're certainly understanding that something is going on there way beyond, you know, any kind of fantasy in a movie. The movie was really done in a way to make it a psychological thriller, and they left out tons and tons of stories of reality, you know, that are going on. They even underestimated, as they said, that 36 people died in the bridge collapse, and it was 46 people. So the movie actually underestimated and undersold the tragedy that's connected with Mothman in many people's minds.
So there's some kind of curse going on.
Well, that seems to be what people are beginning to talk about, a curse, the Mothman curse. You know, you can be working on the movie and being the sound director, and all of a sudden you end up dead in your studio, and it freaks out people that you know.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Hi, who's calling?
Hi, it's Rick in Toronto.
Yeah, Rick.
Listening on 640 Mojo.
Mm-hmm.
My comment is on magnetite. I may have recently heard this on Coast to Coast itself, and this has recently been discovered in most living creatures. It's a naturally occurring ore, but in very small concentrations, it's been found in living creatures, including humans. And could it be that just before these major events, such as earthquakes and whatnot, creatures are reacting to the change in the magnetism?
Oh, certainly. I think that that's been a long-held notion that some animals are actually using this substance inside of them to help with migration, and so it's certainly been well documented, and it could be related to the earthquake predictions too.
Thank you.
All right. In other words, we don't know, Rick, but it could be.
It could be.
All right. Let's move along here and go. I don't want to go there because I want to say I only have a couple of minutes here. And I wanted to ask you about your new book, The Field Guide to Lake Monsters, Sea Serpents, and Other Mystery Denizens. What's it about? I mean, clearly it's about Nessie and that sort of thing, but I don't know what you mean by other mystery denizens.
Well, there's a lot of unknowns out there, and I think that Patrick Weech, who's my co-author, and I really tried to look at all of the different types, from the giant turtles to the sea cows, and came up with a classification system for this really overload of 1,000 lakes in the world have monsters in them, and everyone is named in the book. And all of the sea serpent reports, some of them seem to be giant whales, some of them seem to be new dolphins, but in addition, there are unknown animals out there, and so we tried to look at that. There's illustrations and there are maps and there's cases to really try to paint a picture of that's really kind of messy if you just think about sea serpents and lake monsters, but we tried to organize it in some systematic way.
Well, is it you know, above and beyond Nessie? I mean, Nessie's never...
Oh, yes, it's definitely above and beyond Nessie. We talk about different sea serpents in chronological order and also look at... you know, Nessie is... we talk about the story of Nessie, but there's the Champ, there's Ogopogo, there's Manipogo, there's all kinds of different names and creatures, but there's also, you know, even the story of the giant beavers that have been reported pretty traditionally from Utah and the Bear Lake area and different places like
that. What do you mean by giant beavers?
Well, it's actually people are seeing creatures that only seem to, in the mountain regions of the United States, large, maybe the size of a bison, and they have a tail.
Did you say the size of a bison?
Yep.
It's a beaver the size of a bison?
That's what they're reporting. And it turns out that looking back at the native traditions of the giant beaver helped people discover the fossil remains of giant beavers. There was a giant beaver in the United States and in Canada before the small ones that we all know about. And they're a megafauna. They're from La Brea tar pits and the Pleistocene. So we know they actually existed, but if they're still around, they may be in some of these secluded lakes in the mountains.
Wow. Forget about Bigfoot. Look for Big Beaver.
Right, exactly.
and what's the... I just have 30 seconds. What's the latest on Bigfoot? Is anything new? Anybody found anything definitive?
Well, there's some interesting reports coming out of the Yukon, and so it's still pretty active reports. Other than that, you know, we're just kind of plodding along, looking at that stuff. I think we're very happy to know that the old hoax tales that the media loves, and in my book, The Copycat Effect, I talk about how the media really tries to make, you know, something out of nothing. And those Bigfoot hoax tales and claims are nothing but the latest media trying to put some closure on stories that they can't find uncomfortable.
But they're so exciting, those stories.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Lauren Coleman has been our guest. Thank you very much. It's always good talking to you, Lauren, because I learn a lot. Good night.
Really.
And that's weird stuff that goes on out there, folks. Even weirder stuff is going to go on in the next 3 hours as we talk to Dr. Shelley Kerr about parallel existences, parallel, what shall I say, universes. I am Hilly Rose, in for George Norrie.